the voice of an object. When I realized that that sculpture in the park, if you hit it, it had a voice and it was like really ready to sing, right? Mm-hmm. So different objects have their own, like, and materials have their own resonant qualities. And you can collaborate with them. You can work with them, exploit them, whatever, in order to make certain sound events happen, right? Contact mics can make anything an instrument. You just clip a contact mic to it and suddenly you've got something that's producing sounds that are perceivable and that you can manipulate. You know, you can put that through a system, put it through an amplifier, put it through a mixer, and manipulate it and play with it. Put that contact mic in your hair, put in some tinsel. I guess you can't put it in water, you know, but you know, you can work around that and use like a hydrophone. So I really am like, anything is an instrument that is helping me understand my world and its materials sonically. That's what I've been playing around with. But there's some hard facts though. Like if I want to make something that replicates another instrument, if I want to make a thumb piano, I can be free to make it out of whatever I want, but will it make sounds in a predictable way that are readily perceivable? I don't know, depending on what materials I use, right? So yeah, there's lots of adjusting that can happen within there to get towards what you really want.
I've just been thinking a lot about, I guess, your influences, Afro-pessimism specifically, which has been on my reading list for the longest time. So this is actually inspiring me to finally sit down and make it a part of, yeah, my own theory, because right now I'm in grad school. And also to just anti-blackness. And, you know, it makes me think how, like, anti-blackness operates both in the conscious and subconscious. And I'm curious if sound or using sound as performance can be used as a conduit between the audience and the performer. So oftentimes, you know, I feel like anti-blackness, a lot of people might not even know that they are operating within a state of anti-blackness. And so thinking of sound and how it can operate in a frequency that can also inhabit the subconscious, you know, can it be a disruptor of anti-blackness? Can it be used as a disruptor of that?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many practices that are doing the thing that you're curious about, I would say. Again, to call back to America's musical traditions, right? You know, from spirituals to the blues to rock and roll to like rap music to like, you know, gospel, soul, like all these things. You would think, especially with the blues, where you're literally singing about your troubles living in an anti-black world, you know, you think that this would maybe disrupt anti-blackness, but no. The industry uses anti-black economics to exploit the blues musician, right? You know, like, so I don't want to think of sound as like capable of doing magic or something in that kind of way. I would love it if it were as easy as just like playing a certain tone, like a dog whistle, like tone where like someone's just like going off or is about to do something that they you prefer that they not do. And they just sort of gives them some pause, right? Like, that'd be a fun experiment. And I'm sure there's someone in a lab somewhere that's working on something like that, right? We know that sound impacts behavior.
Yeah.
And there's also like the sound of anti-blackness, not just in speech, mm-hmm. right? But there's like an article, it was someone saying like, why is gentrification so quiet or something like that? And it was a quote unquote like native born and bred New Yorker who knew that a neighborhood was changing when its soundscape changed. And the author kind of explores their own ambivalences about like the sonic changes, because sound is many things. It's also classed, it's racialized. And like I would say for me, right, like I live in an apartment in Friendship, which is a quaint little neighborhood in Pittsburgh, not too far from here. And my building, generally fairly quiet. And I had a new neighbor that moved in, and she and her family were much louder than my previous neighbors. And I was just kind of like, am I being anti-black? Mm. Because like this person is too loud for me, you know, like, and I can hear all of her conversations. And I mean, part of that's that like we're living this like under renovated apartment with really thin walls, you know, so like we're just in each other's space in that kind of way. But then there's also kind of a comfort too, that like her presence indicated for me that like I don't have to be a certain type of person to live in this building. You know what I mean? So the question that you've presented is really deep, you know, it's super deep. A whole book could be written about it. But these are some of the things that come to mind for me about how sound is racialized and how, like, despite the good work that people have been doing for centuries with sound, sound doesn't necessarily automatically change minds and hearts. Sound doesn't happen in a vacuum. and so it's like, what else has happened in a person's life? Mm-hmm. You may listen to the music, but are you building relationships with people? Do you have a curiosity about the people in your life? Do you have a curiosity about yourself and your own behaviors mm-hmm. and the things that you've taken for granted? And maybe you can bond over sound. But yeah, I don't think it's like a magic trick.
I also wanted to ask about Afro-pessimism versus Afro-futurism. And who did these serve in a power structure or system? How do you kind of navigate both of those terms?
I think that's a good question. And honestly, I haven't engaged much with Afro-pessimism with my theoretical hat on in a while, not since writing my graduate thesis. And even then, you know, it's an ongoing conversation, of course. There's a lot of different terms thrown around. It's like Afro-pessimism. There's like Black optimism. There's all these different words. There's like Afro-surrealism, you know, Black quantum futurism. There are all these ways people have been working to understand and share knowledge about the systems that we are under. Yeah, the ways that anti-blackness occurs, right? I mean, there's even the conversation around like critical race theory, right? Where it's like, hey, actually this stuff is baked into the laws, you know? So yeah, I haven't like engaged with the academy in that way in a while to talk about Afro-pessimism with in a sense that feels like fresh and current and like I know who the quote unquote players are. But from what I recall, like the conversation being a few years back is some folks being like, we can't just focus on the terrible things that have happened. There has to be more. Honestly, I think it's people being like, what gives me a reason to wake up, you know, tomorrow morning? You know, does Afro-pessimism make me feel excited to wake up and do my day and be creative and make work? For some people, the answer is yes. For some people, it's no, right? Everyone has their own sense-making project. And with like Afro-futurism, okay, well, I don't know who made up the term Afro-pessimism. I don't know if it was Frank Wilderson and his colleagues, but I will tell you that the term Afro-futurism was created by a white scholar, not a Black scholar. And that's interesting, right? I'm forgetting his name. I feel like it's Mark something. It's a term that quickly helps your audience, whoever you're talking to, kind of place you somewhere. But like the destination shouldn't be predetermined by that name, right? Because I could be making Afrofuturist work that still engages with the past, that engages with enslavement and colonialism and empire. I could be doing that work and still be thinking about a future. So, yeah, I know that definitely the terms have been put into opposition and that people may have their like theoretical camps and sort of be sort of figuring it out. sometimes I'll dip and dabble and use sprinkle a little Afrofuturism on my stuff if I just want to just be like, this is what it is, art and technology. Let's go, you know. But I would really like to, find a term that feels like home for me, or just be happy like not having a specific home and just borrowing from these different discourses because they have different things to teach me.
Yeah, so going back to your thesis, in your thesis you speak of or bring up the concept of withness.
Mm-hmm.
What does working with an audience generate for you? What has surprised you, shocked you, kept you going?
Yeah, thank you for that question. Oh my goodness. Yeah, so I bring that up in the thesis, withness. Sonia Karana, shout out. I brought that up in the thesis because I was really struggling with my relationship to audience. It was this thing of having what felt like incompatible compulsions. Whereas like, I want to make work that's performed in front of people, but I don't want to be perceived. So how do I get through this? Like, I'm so scared about like the lack of control I have and being perceived. But like the thing I want to do can only happen with other people. Because I have questions about play. I have questions about how we're socializing. I have questions about how we're making sense of present day events. I have questions about like how we process information in our bodies, right? I want to know more than what's going on in my head. So withness for me has been a way through, and I talked about like clowning as well, and like the idea of like sharing breath, right? And that being this sort of like exchange, I don't know if it's always an equitable exchange, but there's an exchange where like I mentioned before, there's a people looking in, be like, I want to play too, or like, oh, what's going on over there, right? The kids kind of looking in and judging but also wondering, right? There's something about offering possibilities for other people and therefore offering more possibilities for yourself that comes with acknowledging a withness. I think also it helped me articulate the type of performances I felt less comfortable with, where it felt like a performer was just shutting me out so they could do their compulsion in front of me. And it felt like non-reciprocal in a way, right? And often, you know, that's a feeling one can have as an artist. And yeah, sometimes you do want to see like someone freak out and be like, wow, I didn't know I could do that. I guess that's possible. And other times it's like, I didn't ask for that. I wanted some mystery, you know? And I would struggle within myself because it's like, is this like my latent Christianity coming out right now? Like, there's a conservatism I'm having right now about what's above board or not. And some people are just doing too much, you know? So what's the difference between that experience where I want to run out of the room and experience that like deeply like shakes me and affects me? And I've been in situations where I'm on the side of, I love this artwork that's really challenging and messed up because it takes us to a place that we normally don't go to. And I remember discussing this work, piece by my friends, Jennifer Kidwell and her collaborator, Scott Shepherd. And I was working on the show, helping out with props and some other things here and there. And I was talking to this Black elder about the show, and she was like, just disgusted with the show. Why would you want to produce an image of that, right? It's almost like the Afro-pessimism, Afro-futurism conversation. Why do you want to dwell on that? Why would you create images like that? I remember kind of being like, yeah, I get why this would upset you, but like, I'm not you. And there's a type of witness that I could have because I knew the performers. I got to know them. But even before I got to know them, they were with me in experience I had had. Sometimes you feel these bodily echoes of a history that you could have actually experienced, or a history that could have been an ancestral experience, or stories you've heard from family members or something like that. And when you have a witnessing experience that transports you to that moment and allows you to process it in real time, and the performer does that in a way that's effective, it can be so transformative. So I'm thinking about it, obviously, I'm thinking about it as an audience member and as a performer. And also, I will say that there's ways in which people consume our bodies, period. Like, all, you know, anybody who works, their body's being consumed in some kind of way. But as like an artist, especially in the age of like Instagram, I'm a millennial. I'm not an elder millennial, but, you know, I'm proudly 35. And seeing how people use their bodies for their practice by being like cute or interesting on social media, and the body may be literally in the work, but it could also be like what's giving context to the work. All that consumption just was really messing with my head. And also like being in grad school during the Zoom times, you know, hyper perception, hyper surveillance, you know. So yeah, I really had to figure out for myself, how can I be okay with people looking at me? And they're not just looking at me. They're like ideally sharing space with me. And I get to create rules around that. I don't have complete control, but I do get to structure that exchange. And ideally, it feels good. I want performing to feel good. I just want performing to feel good and feel good for the audience. And maybe that means I just don't make work that's very interesting or risky. But like, I want it to be accessible and for there to be so many different ways in for people.
I mean, like, even the act of making an audio-based thesis is a way of making accessible. Because, I mean, communication or conversation. For me, when you shared your thesis, I listened to it in my headphones. And so it was kind of directly pumped into my ears. And like we've talked about, there's kind of this sound canceling that happens. So there was nothing else but you kind of being pumped in. And it was a rather intense experience to kind of sit, close my eyes, listen, and consume your thoughts and your ideas. And really exciting. So,
yeah, thank you. Thank you for describing that. I'm past the point of feeling like stressed out when someone says that they listen to it. I'm like, oh, but right. That's a way of practicing witness where like you're not seeing my body because of how I recorded it kind of accidentally. Like it's like, okay, we're sharing. Yeah, there's like this is a bodily awareness that's being shared, which is cool. Thank you.
I mean, something that has also kind of come up in this conversation that was touched on by other classmates is this text by Audre Lorde that you quote, which is about the erotics of the audience and the uses of the erotic and the erotics as a bridge. One of our classmates wanted to ask, what are some of your everyday erotics?
Let's see. I will say that a couple weeks ago, I worked on an install at the Science Center, and it was very physical. You know, I was being like Butch Barbie, like so buff, and I loved it after a period of being, you know, very sedentary during the winter. So it was like, I'm hauling around huge movable walls on a pallet jack. I am like using my hands to put things up. I'm like running cable. I'm figuring out what tools I need to like accomplish something. I learned how to safely use a scissor lift. And I was really feeling like in my body. And because of the work schedule, like I had a particular routine, be there at 8. So we have our first break at 10, then have a break at 12, and a break at 3. And it put me into this kind of routine, and awareness of myself. And I really enjoy being myself when I just feel that feeling of confidence and know-how. The various trials and error that I've had, like, have led to something, you know? And yeah, that feels good. Growing season is coming back. Pittsburgh's frost hopefully will end by mid-April, and I'll have my hands in the dirt again. And I'll be nurturing some plants and figuring it out with other people. And like having plant time is a kind of erotics for me. Even setting up my little balcony garden, which always gets messed with by either squirrels or maintenance workers at my building. Like everybody's messing with my stuff. But when it's really cute, you know, there's like a neighborhood cat that comes and just like, wow, like, you know, like just sits there. I sit there in my robe, catching the breeze. I'll watch like birds sort of like come around and do their little bird thing. I'll notice who's blooming or which vines are sort of going. Noticing how, like, for example, I grow gourd plants, and they're a very like musky plant. I don't know. Maybe there's like something to bottle up and put in like a cologne mix or something. But like, it's a very specific scent. And they're also super hairy. They're just covered in what we would say like is peach fuzz. I'm a hairy person. I'm like, you know, I've come back around to like being more okay with it, but it always was like an issue for me. And thinking about like my own desirability, you know, as a person, like, oh, I got too much hair. And my mom telling me that growing up in Liberia, having like leg hair was hot, you know, like people be like, ooh, look at that girl, her legs are hairy. And I'm like, wrong place, wrong time. Like, but yeah, seeing that my gourd plants are just as fuzzy as me, you know, that feels like a type of erotics too, where I feel like connected and rooted and I want to wake up the next day. But I'll also have a disclaimer there that like, it's not always easy to get to set aside the time. It's like I almost have this amnesia about things that feel good. And I think I just literally need a list of things that feel good that I need to like look at and just be like, what am I doing on this list? I don't know why I'm like this, but when I remember that these are things that bring me pleasure, that's when I'm living a good life.
That's awesome. This has been such a great, amazing conversation. Unfortunately, we're at towards the end, but we do have one final question.
Okay.
Our final question is, what brings you deep joy?
Deep joy. Well, I love a good improv. When the thing happens and we're just all vibing and flowing, people know when to pull back and when to pull forward, when to give space, how to do call and response with each other. Oh my gosh. Like I'm getting a head tingle right now thinking about it. I got to be in this improvised performance at the space upstairs, right above the Center for Creative Reuse. It's right above there. It's like a warehouse space that has a resident dance group, a dance company that's there. I think the current one's called like the Pillow Project. Anyway, some folks from the improv group that I usually go to were performing and I was invited to join. We were essentially collaborating with this group called How Things Are Made. And the setup was there'd be like four of us improvising with our various instruments connected to mics or whatever. And then the dudes from How Things Are Made would be processing all of our signals, right? So like they have the mixers and the various computers routing sound around. And we had a score inspired by John Cage, actually, where you could see like what seconds or minutes you were going to be like playing your instrument and when you were to fall back. So there could be some minutes where you're just like falling back and just getting to like tap in and to see what people are doing around you, right? And it was like pure uncut fill in the blank. It was such an ecstatic experience. And I just was like, I had a high for the next day, just feeling that level of connection and freedom with other performers. My partner was in the audience. I was like, yeah, check me out, baby. Like, I'm doing the thing, you know? I felt good in my body. I just felt so embodied and grounded and present. And so, yeah, that brought me, like, deep joy. And it had the erotics component in it as well. And, yeah, that was real good. That was really, really good.
Awesome. Well,
amazing. Thank you
thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you for tuning in to Is Sound a Language?
Thanks, y'all. Thanks for inviting me. Shout out to Ginger for being a sibling in sound. Looking forward to experimenting with you more and playing with you more. Thank you.
often imitated but not quite duplicated. This is the H. Dredd Show, WRCT.
Chat under a false pretense. Now, if you Trouble anywhere we want, cause comes an immigration of a fundamental flaw. Innocent families, them separating with no cause. Them system is designed for treat the poor like them from Mars. Them call you immigrant and then lock you behind the bars. Your visa gets revoked no matter how much it costs. But Rastafari is the ultimate and we no answer to no cause. We are all world citizens. We should be free to be dragged into another land. Of immigration, civilly bang, world citizens. The unity of mankind is my mission and my only plan, yeah. World citizens, set the figure up on dirty Babylon again.
Ups and greetings and hello to all the massive out there that are tuned in right now. This is Dubmatics and you're listening to One to One with Kevin Amos on WRCT Pittsburgh. And you know what I'm going to say? Don't change that dial because you know we want to make you smile.
As my drive alone, street light flicker on empty lane, bassline rolling, soothe my brain. Window half down, breeze in my face, night old secrets moving at my pace. Heartbeat steady, rhythm in my chest, no rush now, just follow the quest. Oh, midnight ignition, new journey begin, soundtrack of silence and flow. Late night DJ talk soft and low. City start fading, memories creep. Dreams in the mirror, hopes me keep. Blink of a neon, echo in air. Somebody waiting, me don't know where. Just me and the rhythm, stars overhead. Midnight ignition, forward me trail.
Headlights sweep cross empty street. Faces disappear before we meet. Travelers moving slow, whispering secrets man never know. Night air heavy, tension high. Strangers pass silent, just a nod, no high. We wonder their stories, where them belong. Shadow riders drifting here, then gone. Shadow riders pass through the night. Ghostly companions out of sight. Riding together, then gone again. Night drive mysteries never explained. By the old lamppost, coat collar up, faces like ghosts. Might be a lover, might be a friend. Just shadow riders with nowhere to end. Sometimes a bicycle, sometimes a car. We see them from distance, never too far. Blink and them vanish, fade into black. Shadow riders never look back.
footsteps fade, shadow ride nights. Every journey brings strangers me meet. Shadow riders blending with city beat. Me pass by the crossroads, slow down me pace. Catching reflections, a flicker of face. Night is for moving, night is for dreams. Shadow riders silent, or so it seems. Soon me alone, but still me feel. Others beside me, shadows real. Riding together till morning light. Shadow riders vanish out of sight. Shadow riders pass through the night. Ghostly companions. Riding together, then gone again. Night drive mysteries never explained. Shimmer pump pavement, colors in line. Shop window shining, everything fine. Traffic light dance red, yellow, green. Reflections are play in a midnight sheen. Cars pass by, faces unknown. Some searching comfort, some just alone. Me follow the glow, follow the signs. City lights guide me. Up my mind, oh, city lights flow, wash over my soul, blazing like fire when the night take control, moving through shadows, moving through dreams, city lights carry me further, it seems, billboards are flicker, neon are hum, rhythm of footsteps, rhythm a drum, corner man whistle, taxi go past, moments just flicker, none of them last, late night vendor serve soup by the lane, smoke from the pot, ease away pain, me sip and me smile, watch people go, life keep moving in the city lights flow. Reflection in the glass sheet. Skyscraper outline against velvet sky. Music from party drift gently by. Night full of promise, me can't explain. Every blinking light, a part of me brain. Me turn the corner, bass lines grow. City still calling, me can't say no. Keep rolling steady, just riding slow. Night drive alive in the city lights flow.
Soon may move on, road waiting still, but neon against my will. No neon signs whisper calling my name. Secret confessions never the same. Guiding my journey with light so slight. Night drive magic beneath the sky.
Right. royal room. Street lamp flicker, shadow retreat. Soft golden sunlight kiss the street. Me watch horizon, color spread wide. Hope right beside me can't hide. Eyes red from journey, but me not tired. First light arrival, me feel inspired. City awake, people soon walk, but me alone, hear the morning talk. First light arrival, day come alive, blessings unfolding as sun start to rise. Journey now ending, story brand new. First light arrival, fresh point of view. Touch my face, memories of night gently erase. Dew on the grass, cool in a hand, ready for living new dreams planned. Engine now silent, rhythm complete. Me step out slow, feel the heartbeat. Me give thanks for night that passed me by. First light arrival under open sky. Sunlight warm, fresh breath, smile wide. All my troubles wash away. First light arrival, brand new day. Me open the door, coffee pot steam. Family yawning, new daydream. Smile upon my face, future feel bright. Night drive done, me walk in a light. Me look to the east, sun climbing high. Every beginning needs goodbye. First light arrival, journey renewed. With every sunrise, me start anew. Streets one by one, driver a reason about life and fare, tales of the city, troubles he bear, radio low, rhythm I play, me watch through the glass as night slip away, stop at the corner, pick up a friend, in all the taxi journey never end, oh taxi through town, wheels spin slow, every face a story everywhere me go, laugh and reason till the ride is front, tired eyes but spirit still brunt, youth man bored, dreadlock sway, asking the driver which road today, me peer through the window, neon a flash, market close up, vendors dash, red light blinking, moments pass, taxi keep rolling through city glass, dashboard light, taxi man hum, mixing with city drum. Me drop a coin, wish him well. Driver smile wide, got stories for tell. Last passenger out, ride almost through. Me step in the silence, night fresh and new. Tail light fading, engine sound gone. Street quiet now, but journey live on. Taxi through town, another tail spun. Night drive rhythm, next ride soon come. Taxi through town, wheels spin slow. Face a story everywhere may go. Laugh and reason till the ride is done. Night drive living till morning come. Turn up the volume, let the rhythm flow. Lonely nights shining from the radio glow. Dashboard lit up, numbers fade slow. Midnight DJ talk in a soothing flow. Old roots rhythms, new lovers tune. Voice like a blessing under the moon.
rough signal drifting in air. Music connect me with people out there. Stories and meditations riding the wave. Late night confession, brave and brave.
Thank you. percussion scatter like feet in the street. Fragments of vocals, fragments repeat. Saxophone drip like mist through town. Hi-hat shimmer as moon go down. Sirens and delays staring left and right. Fader up, fader down, up through the night. Engine brake hard, bass spin around. Midnight rhythm in double Y sound.
To WRCT online. Live streaming available at www.wrct.org. WRCT Pittsburgh. You have no excuse not to listen.
This is Watch Burn It, aka Congress. And you are listening to WRCT. Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back.